So then I asked some questions about how do you create this identity? Is it based on your name? Is it based on a pseudonym? Obviously, if you're on Twitter, you know that a lot of people try and come up with catchy handles that don't necessarily relate to their name. People call themselves, I can't think of any off the top of my head, but there's someone who uses her cat's name that I follow. So again, I was trying to tease out, how do you tie this personal identity to who you are in real life? So about half said, I just use my name, it's who I am. The next biggest group, about a fifth, said, I use a pseudonym. In New Zealand, a lot of people use Maori words, so one of my colleagues uses the word taonga, which means treasure. I don't think he thinks of himself as a treasure. I think he just likes the fact that it begins with a T and so does his real name. But they'll use a pseudonym or they'll use another word, but they identify themselves in their profile. So although they're not using their name, you can figure out who they are. And about one in six, 15.5%, so I use a pseudonym, but I don't let people know who I am. That's really hard to manage. They almost always end up giving something away that means you can figure out who they are, but they try. They basically say, I don't want to have these two connected with me. And some of them said, I have so many, I don't have a preferred one. So then I said, okay, if you use social media professionally, how do you establish your identity? What's the professional context here? So again, about the same amount. It's my name. It's who I am. You know, people know who I am. I use my name. And this is where there's a much bigger jump. So some of them just use their the name of their organization. That was most commonly the case where people ran an organizational blog or they ran an organizational Twitter account. It's under the name of the organization. Some of them use a generic position title. This was most common when people interacted through an intranet and they had an online identity through work. So it's the reference librarian, or it's the librarian, or it's the information manager. So they tended to use a position title rather than their name. And a fairly big group said, I haven't got anything that I use professionally. I then asked people to fill in some short answer questions about why do you do this? Why do you either create two separate identities, or why do you have one, or why have you done this? So for the group of people who said, I just have one, the people who essentially said, I don't try and split them, these were some of the reasons they gave. Why would you manage more than one? I would feel less comfortable if they made this split. What are they trying to hide? The idea that if you didn't present yourself as one coherent whole, there was something suspicious about it. This last one, that applies to me. There aren't that many Chawners around, so I can't really pretend that I'm not me. If my name is anywhere around it, people know who I am. So why would I bother pretending? For me to pretend, I would have to take the I don't put my name anywhere around it approach. So that was one group who essentially said, I'm me, this is who I am, I'm comfortable putting my life out there. The second group were the people who made a really strong distinction, the ones who said, what I do professionally has nothing whatsoever with what I do privately, and I want to keep those two aspects of myself separate. And so we've got comments like this. My personal life is quite separate to my professional life, and the kinds of interactions I have online differ markedly between the two. Essentially, this group of people felt very strongly that when they leave work, they leave their professional identity behind, and what they do at home should have nothing whatsoever to do with their professional identity. And they made a strong attempt to keep those two separate. They felt that what they did personally, whether it was being active in online gaming or various other sorts of social media, had nothing whatsoever to do with what they did from a work-related. And this one, personal and professional interests seldom collide. They were essentially saying that I leave my work at the office. I did also get some comments from the people who said, I want to be totally anonymous. I don't want to have an online identity. I don't want to. And I thought that was interesting. When I had to create something for training, so their organization was moving into social media. They were told, go off and learn about it. The training involved creating a profile, not just being told about it, but actually doing it. And we have someone who said, I made up a persona identity to remain anonymous. I don't want to share anything online. I worked with someone who deliberately misspelled her name when she created her Facebook profile, so that only her friends that she told how to find her would be able to find her. And she had that same, she kind of felt she had to be there, but she at the same time didn't want it connected to her, and that was her approach. So we've also got this group of people who kind of jealously guard their online or their identity. I thought I would, at this point, just read some of the longer comments and then talk about some of the issues that this raises. Somebody who clearly made the distinction, I view my site as being personal and nothing to do with my employer. I don't see social media as being a good use of work time, nor do I see it as being particularly useful. So this was somebody who did stuff personally but didn't feel that she got any professional benefit from social media. Someone else, I try to use social media that works for me. This means to keep in touch with people I know and to keep in touch with or for work-related purposes. Two separate categories, and I keep them separately. This person was very, very concerned about privacy. I am concerned about being too visible personally and about strangers being able to use that visibility to build a profile of me. However, when it comes to work, there are real advantages in being seen. So again, seeing the personal benefits in terms of, I guess, her professional career. And so she was willing to make a compromise for that. Somebody who did probably fell into the low use category. I regard social media as a distraction and a complete waste of time. So we've got the skeptics. That came through more in the comments. This one I felt was quite revealing. Although I was not allowed on computers at school, only the smart kids were. I think that says a lot about the New Zealand education system at the time. For the past 10 years, they have interested and fascinated me, and the growth of online culture has enriched my life. I feel very lucky to live in a time when I can watch some of the greatest minds, TED, etc., share their passion. And she's concluded by saying, or he, I don't know who it was, being a librarian is the best job in the world. In real tangible ways, I change lives. And there was a lot more to that comment about teaching people to use these tools in the library and seeing how they can change people's lives. So somebody feeling very positive about it. This one was interesting. I have often found that I hold back from making certain comments because I work with the public. And I wouldn't want anyone to be reluctant about approaching me because of views that I have expressed online. This was someone who had a single identity and felt that it was too hard to keep them separate, but at the same time recognized that being identifiable imposed some limits on what he or she was able to do online, that people might see something I said and use it against me. This one was from somebody who made a clear separation. I love it and enjoy using different media to express myself. Have made fun links with work colleagues. I'm more of a lurker, but my personal family blog is prolific. Twitter is fun for work. Some things she doesn't like remind her of talkback radio, but likes being anonymous. So that one had a really strange, there's stuff I like but stuff I don't like, and I kind of hide behind something there. And this one was somebody who was talking more about personal use, but again, raised an interesting point. She said, it's easy to assume that because your immediate family and nieces and nephews are all in the pictures and family stuff on Facebook, that everyone is. We have to make a conscious effort to remember that some people don't use Facebook like my grandmother. And we have to make sure that they're not isolated because everyone's now spending all of their time online. We forget that they're not. I thought that was an interesting point, too. And there were still a few people who mentioned employers restricting, but by and large, what came through in the comments much more in the second time was, my employer is encouraging us to do this, we're moving into this space. So, to me, that raises some really important questions for organizations. Who does actually represent you in the range of online social media? Your staff are probably out there blogging and tweeting and Facebooking, whether it's simply personally or whether they're known to be part of your organization. So do you have a policy that says if you're out there, you need to have a disclaimer? I'm starting to see more disclaimers coming through on people's blogs. This is my personal site and does not represent the views of my employer. But at the same time, if it's easy to connect them to the employer, how do you maintain that distance? To what extent do employees represent their employer in their private lives? Some of the people commenting did acknowledge that. If they worked in government in particular, they would note that everything I do can be seen to be reflecting on my employer, and therefore I have to be very careful of what I say online. People who worked in government seemed to be particularly conscious of this, that anything they said online could be used against them. And so I think that is something that most employers have to have. I don't know. My employer certainly doesn't have a social media policy that I'm aware of. A number of us have blogs and Twitter accounts and so on, and we encourage our students to create it. We contribute under our own names, but should we be? Do we need to attach a disclaimer all the time? I don't know. And how do you handle that overlap between personal and professional? I think those are kind of important questions that organizations need to consider these days. And I've seen a few examples of good social media policies, but I haven't seen enough to feel that it's really that organizations are really coming on board with it yet. But all of the indications are, and certainly the survey results show, that people are going to be out there doing things. This was in Dilbert a couple of weeks ago. I thought it was perfect timing. So we've got the company appointing their new marketing manager for social media. But company policy forbids the use of Facebook and Twitter at work, and we don't trust you to work from home. And if you blog about how lame we are, you're fired. And she says, first day, not so good. So I think the fact that Dilbert's picked this up means that it is starting to happen, but it just seemed like too good an opportunity to pass up. But there are also implications of social media and moving into these spaces for individuals. And I think everyone has to decide for themselves, to what extent are you representing your employer when you're acting online in a private capacity? Some people will say I'm not, and therefore it shouldn't matter. The reality is that it does. I think it's very naive to assume that because you say something, it doesn't bounce back to your employer, or it doesn't have the potential to affect your employer. How do you protect your privacy, and to what extent do you need to control what you say in public? There's a really good example of this happening in the Koha community right now. You know what I'm talking about. I see the laugh. Pardon? L-E-K, yeah. For those of you who don't know the background, Koha is a free and open source library management system that originated in New Zealand. There is a company in the States called LibLime that markets Koha, supports and markets Koha. The company's gone through a change of ownership. It's now owned by a company called PTFS. And there have been some staff changes. One of the people who used to work for LibLime now works for one of the competitors. And there's been some tension because this person was invited to give what she calls a vendor-neutral presentation to an SLA chapter. And she agreed to do that, but then she discovered that it was going to be sponsored by her performer employer, and she said that if it was going to be, if it was sponsored by another employer, by the other company, she would have to she could no longer be vendor neutral because she felt it was a conflict of interest. Somebody at PTF has blogged about this, and essentially it was a very nasty personal attack on Nicole. She has subsequently put her side of the story, but it's turned into this very nasty, he said, she said, you support them, you support me kind of debate that's all happening in public, and it actually reflects very badly on everyone concerned, I think. It's now degenerated into the, you are no longer my Facebook friend because of what I said. And it's a perfect example of how complicated these sorts of exposing yourself in social media can be when things start to go wrong. If you haven't followed the latest, I'm not sure if you want to. But part of the problem is that some of this was posted on a company blog, and so it now reflects very badly on the company. And I keep saying what you need to do is just step back, take some time, and say, what are you going to do to help to make sure this doesn't happen again? It sounds as if part of the problem was that the organization organizing the talk didn't tell Nicole in time who the sponsor was, and so she found out kind of late in the piece and felt led up the garden wall. But it is really awkward for everyone concerned. So you simply cannot have a private capacity, it seems, anymore. And this last question, I think, is kind of interesting too, because if you work somewhere where your employer is comfortable with you having an online, working online under your name, saying you work for them, etc., what happens if you change jobs and your new employer isn't? How do you go about erasing your previous history or stopping your previous history or saying? So there's a long-term implications of being online that aren't necessarily so easy to think through. I do know someone who, every time she changes jobs, she sets up a new online identity for her new. And what tends to happen is she forgets the passwords for the old ones, but they're still there, and it just gets very muddled. So I don't think we have very good answers for handling this transition now. If you go somewhere and they say, We want to look after, we want to manage what you do online. I mean, obviously an employer can't necessarily do that, but it does raise questions for what happens when people change. So I think this whole notion of identity is something that we're going to see a lot more work and a lot more people asking questions about. And I know that for the last few years, every incoming class, we have at least one student who has a domain that's their name. I don't know whether that's the case in here, but I've taught at least three students who, before they've even started, they've set up their online identity using their name, and they have, so-and-so.com or so-and-so.net. And that's something they're going to have for the rest of their lives, and they see that as being important. So how does that affect whether people move into a role where they're required to, or to watch what they say? And there have been issues with some of our graduates getting jobs where they have shared the fact that they've got a job with the rest of the world before their employer has told the unsuccessful candidates. Yep, I see some nods in the audience. And to them, it's just natural to share this there. And so that means that they start off their new employment on the wrong foot, because the first thing that happens is they get a little talk about it's not appropriate to share that before we've done this. So I think there are lots of things that people are going to have to learn about managing these sorts of tensions. So that's the summary of what we did and what we found. I don't want to leave it there. I have a strong suspicion that there is a relationship between age and the extent to which people are willing to have a single identity and split ones. From what I've picked up, the more senior people do things under their name, they're the authorized spokespeople for their organizations. They're quite happy with that as an approach. It tends to be the younger ones who have maybe the more varied lives who keep a distinct split. But I think we're going to see a lot more consciousness. I think we need to find out what is best practice here for social media. particularly where organizations are getting into doing things on an organizational benefit, do you have the anonymous posted by reference librarian, or do you actually say, who is your reference librarian today? To what extent do you expose the people behind the corporate one is an interesting question. And I want to find out what's happening in next year, what's changed in 2 more years. My sense is that we're going to see a little bit of things lowering. I'm starting to pick up that there's less going on. Blogging's definitely fallen off the radar for a lot of people. And I'll finish with this. This is from Karen Schneider. Some of you might know Karen. She blogs as free-range librarian. She's had a fairly high profile. In terms of using the internet and filtering was where she got started. And during the first round of the Koha LibLine thing, because we're now in another one, she said, what is a personal response in a world where our public-private lives are so blurred? So at the time she wrote this, she was working for another company in the library open source ILS market. She felt she had something to say, but at the same time she acknowledged that because she worked for one of their competitors, it was hard for her to be completely neutral in terms of what she said. So it's really hard to keep those sorts of distances now that things are getting so blurred. And Karen, I like that phrase. So that's the end of the formal part of the talk.